This is the Angry Angel, just calling to say have a happy Christmas, Lug Radio. And our official response, say, we have more Lug... Oh, fuck. That's completely ballsy up.
Hello, little boy. Come and sit on my Lug Radio knee. It's
yes, Mr.
the
Glitter.
Season to be Jolly 3, Episode 5, yeah. Days of
oh
Christmas.
Oh, my God, that's the scariest
that time. More than anything.
That was the most disturbing thing in the world.
Hello, Merry fucking Christmas.
Yeah, Merry fucking Christmas.
Oh, by the way,
where's
show
my
might contain swearing.
Happy New Year. Shit, there's nothing here I like.
Why didn't you buy me an Amiga?
Oh, Amiga's rough. Anyway, what are we going to talk about in the show?
No,
you don't even know because we haven't talked about it yet.
Aaron Sago.
I was just amazed that we haven't introduced ourselves yet, as we're supposed to do.
I'm Matthew Reeval.
You are Matthew Reeval.
Yep.
I'm not.
Wise, neither am I. Neither am I.
Excellent.
Okay, so, Matthew Reeval show.
So,
Right, Aaron Sago, he's the guy from KDE. We've spoken to him before. We'll have a 5-minute catch-up to see what's happening in the KDE world.
Yes, we will.
Yep. We'll speak to a guy from Body Piss as well, see how he's getting on.
Yeah. We have a lovely Christmassy competition for you.
What did you say, Aid?
We have a lovely Christmassy competition to give goodies to you.
Goodies.
We do. We can talk about social networks and whether they're shit.
Bring it on.
Or just are they shit, or perhaps they're shit.
And of course, eye candy. Is it hype or shite? Yes, hype or shite is back.
Hey!
Yes, so let's get the show on the road.
Rock on.
Obviously, you don't think it's either hype or shite. You think it's pretty good.
So, Matthew Reeval, Adrian Bradshaw, Stuart Langridge and me, John O'Bacon, let's get it going.
Last year in the Ghosts of Christmas Future,
yes,
everyone here made some predictions
Excuse
for
me,
2005.
Wasn't it the Ghosts of Open Source Future?
Oh, it might have been.
Something like that.
Anyway. Something like that, whatever. Anyway,
yeah,
you made some predictions.
Shit-picking nitpicker.
I spent some time today listening to that show.
Hey.
And writing down those predictions, and we'll see how we got on, shall we?
I wonder who was right in their predictions.
Jono probably predicted that he got lots of free stuff from work, so that'll make him right.
He fucking pissed you off, hasn't
he? Okay, so let's begin. Let's begin with Jonathan Bacon.
Okay.
Say hello.
Who made a prediction that the focus in 2005 will be on skills and certification and training courses, and the LPI would do something important. And they did buckle.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, this is a message to the people who do LPI stuff.
Message.
Do some LPI stuff.
Yep.
Aid then followed up and saying he's expecting Red Hat to do something big in the certification area. Fuck off.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Well, they're already doing quite a lot in the certification area.
We all said that we expected Novell to invent some kind of certificate to rival the Red Hat certified engineer. Fuck off.
Nice one, Novell.
Am I spotting a theme?
So
that's about your predictions.
Not to exonerate myself, I said Sun would do something. They did fuck all as well.
They would
do open
in
source
in
Solaris.
No. This is specifically about certification.
I said next.
Right, okay. Next prediction. Aid.
Yes.
Adrian Bradshaw.
Hello.
Said KDE will fork and there will be a lightweight KDE.
What a fucking ridiculous
No such KDE.
That was probably more of a wish in retrospect.
A year ago, it all seemed so possible.
Yep.
Well, Linus still thinks
my
it
chin.
Is.
John O remarked during that discussion that KDE had lost focus on usability. They now seem to be regaining that focus on usability a little bit with the plasma stuff and everything.
So did I say they'd regain it?
No.
You said
they basically lost all focus on usability.
But that's not a prediction.
Which was the truth, but it wasn't a prediction.
Did I make a statement of fact?
You didn't make a prediction in that area. Matt said that he expected that the cell chip and the power PC would get together and erode Intel's dominance.
Did I really?
And I think a really good example of that of how the largest power PC users in the world, Apple, have now moved to Intel chips.
Actually, they're not the largest. They're not the largest.
That is the most worst position so far.
Microsoft are now pumping out loads of them.
Right.
And, you know.
Not exactly eroded Intel's dominance, though.
Not at all. I was wrong, just as you were.
Aid said that he expected to see something big in the groupware area, e.g. an open-source clone of Exchange Server.
Who?
No. The Zimbra, which...
Open and Exchange, Hula.
It's not like Exchange, but it's a group.
Open Exchange and Hulu existed last year, and you knew about them last year. Possibly Zimbra.
Zimbra.
But I'm not sure Zimbra's any closer to Exchange than Hulu is, and we already knew about Hulu. He was talking about something closer to Exchange.
I'd say it's close in the fact that it's fucking finished.
I've been the closest so far.
No offence to the Gas Man and Dave Kemp.
I thought Zimbra was just a load of screenshots. Is that
actually... No, it's actually a pucker.
No, it doesn't work.
Right. I thought it was a pretty interface.
Isn't it a cross between a Zimmer frame and a zebra?
Zebra using the Zimmer frame.
Zimbra. I said there would be one and only one major Linux deployment, and I think there were none and only none.
No, there were a number of different Linux deployments.
Were there major Linux deployments? They're sort of newsworthy.
Yeah, I'd say so.
You think so? Okay.
There was the...
Get in!
No, I
said one and only one, okay.
You're still wrong.
I'm still wrong.
What a ridiculous thing to predict, anyway.
Matt said he was expecting IBM to do something really big and remarkable in the desktop space, and they did fuck all.
What was I thinking?
They have recently announced...
They sold off their fucking thing.
Desktop.
Lenovo.
To Lenovo, but that had happened last year, because you last year, and expecting something big to come out of that, nothing big as
they have just upped their embrace of Red Hat and SUSE there.
They've made them top tier.
Yeah, top tier partners. Top dogs. Yeah. Really? So that is quite big.
Yeah, but it's nothing to do with
not really.
John predicted there will be Lug Radio Paintball in February 2005.
Jesus, what were we thinking?
Which there was not.
Did I specifically say that?
Yes.
Hang on. Lug Radio Live, we went to paintball.
Not in February.
Not in February. John very specifically predicted
in February.
Oh, he
didn't predict it in February.
That was
before
February. Right. That was half right.
Matt said he was expecting two more Lug Radio-style open source radio shows to start up.
Several have.
Such as?
Not Lug Radio style.
Not Lug Radio style.
Lug Radio style.
Lug Radio style.
If you're talking about podcasts. Do you understand your own prediction?
In fact...
podcast is a fairly easy prediction. There'll be two podcasts in 2000.
In fact... And Matt did one of them, because he's a podcaster.
Dogcaster, by the way.
In fact, I said Sun would partially open source Java, and Sun have, in fact, not at all open source Java. In fact, the only prediction we made that we got right...
Yeah?
...was that there would be Lug Radio Live in 2000.
I predict there'll be one next year.
We were right about we're not going to do any predictions. In the next show, you'll hear our predictions for 2006, and I promise they'll be a tiny bit more right than this year.
We hope they will be.
Because we'll probably have Radio Live twice or something.
All we can promise.
Do you have a time machine? Can you travel at 88 miles an hour?
I know.
Do you have a flux
capacitor? Prediction.
No predictions.
I've got a prediction that will happen.
What did you
want? We'll be wrong about the predictions.
Tell you what, the only thing that we can promise for next month's feature, next thing is
feature, that we will love you.
Is that it'll have a good title?
Yes.
It certainly will.
A title that has been in the works for months. Right.
PC.
PC's in the house, motherfucker! Right, there's this bloke called Justin, he used to work for SUSE, now he works for SDS or something.
Oh, right.
And,
he doesn't sell furniture for fucking living.
He runs his thing called
Buddy
Pink.
He works for DFS.
Right. In Darleydale. And he works for whoever that is. But his hobby is Buddy Ping. Ping's in the house.
In the house, Buddy Ping.
Let's have a chat to him about what the mofo it is.
Hello, Justin. It's Jono from Lug Radio.
And Aid.
And Matthew.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Ah, good, good. So tell us about Buddy Ping.
Well, just get straight in there with a question.
Buddy Ping started after I heard about Dodgeball in the US, and I thought, well, why haven't we got anything like that in Europe? Essentially, Buddy Ping and Dodgeball get social networking and then put it on the mobile.
Right.
And that's pretty much it, really. I mean, it's that simple. You get stuff like Friendster, MySpace, all of that other stuff as well.
I gotta say, in terms of dodgeball, are you on about people who lob balls at each other or something else?
No, unfortunately not.
Not your childhood games.
I don't even know where the name came from, really. I guess it's, you know, just tagging your friends, and that's what dodgeball does. It's sending in a text message to say where you are, dodgeball checks out where everybody else is and then sends a text message back to everybody else, and that's essentially what Buddy Ping does in the Europe. But
so basically, you just copied it.
Not quite, no. We took the idea and we refined it.
Ah, that's what I said, yeah.
the way that dodgeball works in the US is that they base it on venues, so it's very limited to what it can and can't do. So, you know, if a venue is not listed on dodgeball, you can't use it.
Oh,
so
I see.
The way that we've done it is that we do it based on the town that the person is in.
Uh-huh.
So we've managed to do it so that basically across the whole of the world, if we know what town you're in, or if we know the name of the town, we can locate you and your friends without a problem.
Cool. Okay.
So basically, use case would be you're on Hampstead Heath, you text it in, you know, and you get the names of all your special friends around you.
Matthew, what are you
implying?
Something
like that, yeah.
It is like that. That's what it's for, yeah.
Have you thought about having it automatically pick up where someone is rather than having to text in and say, I'm on Hampstead Heath? I mean, phones know that stuff.
I think you have to.
No, unfortunately, phones don't know that stuff. The mobile operators know that stuff. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
The mobile operators, if we're talking about the UK specifically and most of Europe, the mobile operators actually charge for every time you do a lookup of someone's location. If you did a location lookup of somebody in London, for example, it can usually pinpoint you down to about 50 metres. If you did it in a more rural area, it could be as big as 20 kilometres.
Right.
So it's not exactly accurate.
So it's... Just so I can get it straight in my head, it's a fairly manual thing, so you'd all have to have texted to say where you are for it to
be
accurate.
That's what I was going to ask, yeah.
Yeah, you would. And that is the big downside, really. I mean, it's the same with any social networking site. You're not going to get anything good out of it unless, you know, you're interacting with people or interacting with your friends, and if people aren't using it, then you're not going to get anything out of it.
Uh-huh.
That is the big downfall about social networking sites. I mean, I started BuddyPing off as just messing around. I'm not...
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing it because I want to be the next Friendster or anything else. I'm doing it because I think it's pretty cool to be able to mix social networking and your mobile together and see how people use it.
Would you say that it is a social network? Because it doesn't seem to be a way to find new people, but it's a way to tell you where your existing group of friends are.
Well, you see, you've got the danger of... If you're trying to, I mean, it really does depend on what you define as being a social network. Surely, you know, if I have a group of friends, are they my social network? Well, yes, they are. I mean, if you're doing, you know, mobile social software and mobile social networking, you can quite easily find all of your friends, and that is your social network. You have the danger, of course, that if you're adding the mobile phone and the location to a social service or social network, you're running into the problem of essentially turning into a dating site. You go out in London, all of a sudden you get a text message saying there's some mayor which is around the corner which thinks that you're attractive and wants to meet up with you.
Some mayor.
It's a difficult situation to be in, you know.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a problem.
Yeah.
One of the things with you know, joining a new social network type of thing is that people are likely to already be members of other social networks.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
And you have to, you know, you have to sign in again, re-find all of your friends, and then connect up with them explicitly on BuddyPing again. Have you thought about ways of integrating with existing social networks?
Well, I've been around the internet for quite a while, and, you know, I'm a Linux guy as well, and I look at the whole Web 2.0 and RSS and all that kind of stuff as well, and open APIs, you know, the same thing that everybody else is doing, which they call themselves Web 2.0, and by the way, I'm not calling myself Web 2.0.
Hey,
I'm not a person or anything. But, you know, the big thing that I want to be able to do with BuddyPing is really just open it up so that people, you know, God forbid, you know, people like Friendster or somebody else can use BuddyPing to mobilize existing content.
Right,
We've already kind of gone to that kind of step by we've introduced these things called pinglets, which basically allows anyone to plug in an RSS feed, which gets distributed via SMS to anybody who subscribes to it. So we're slowly but surely trying to get it to a point where, like, things like Ning, you know, the Ning Playground and things like that, which allows people to be able to build their own applications. In Ning's case, it's social software.
Did he say Ning
Playground? In BuddyPing's case, what we're trying to do is to allow people to build applications around the mobile phone, so they don't have to have the infrastructure, they don't have to set up the expensive SMS infrastructure or anything else like that.
Justin, can you just explain where the Rats of Ning come in? Sorry, the what playground?
Ning, N-I-N-G.
Right, the Knights who say Ning.
Ning's just, you know, they call it a playground, which just allows people to be able to build any kind of social software.
Oh, interesting, right. Here's the thing, I mean,
I'm sure that if some kind of pursuited venture capitalist came along, you wouldn't exactly kick him out the door. But I know it's interesting that you say that you're not doing it because, you know, you're looking to make a quick buck or anything. You're actually interested in the whole concept. So let me ask you this question. Do you really see there being a future for social networking? Now, a lot of people see it as the future, but every time I've used it, and a lot of the people, very, very internet savvy, very, you know, open-minded people who've used it, just seem to find it quite interesting for a little while, particularly seeing what comments their mates are making about them. But then very slowly it all kind of fades away and people get a bit bored and just start living normal lives again. Do you think that it is a fad, or do you reckon there's some proper contribution it can make to our, well, to society, I suppose?
I think social networking sites as a whole, I think the idea is great. I think the problem that you have is, it's like a lot of other new technologies which come out, that the problem you have is that you've got to refine it. You've got to, you know, find the real way of being able to hold and capture people. And it's a problem which any, you know, web business has had since the web started. I think social software is something good which is going to continue in the future. Some of the big players, I do get a feeling, will fizzle out and die because people will, as you said, they'll sign up, find out what other people are writing about them, and then not get any use out of it. I mean, one of the most successful social networking sites out there at the moment is LinkedIn. I mean, it's specifically for professionals, but they seem to be slowly but surely getting to that, you know, utopia of social software sites that allows you to actually get something useful out of it and go back again and again. One of the big things about social software is that you're right, you sign up, you mess around, and then you just leave it and don't do anything else. The big thing is that the community as a whole has to contribute something to the social network so everybody else can feed off it. It's just trying to get that initial burst with people providing content. You know, it could be reviews, it could be pictures of their arses, you know, it could be anything else which people just find interesting to have a look at.
Where were the arses?
And that is what is missing in social software sites. A lot of people are saying, well, you know, if I just have a list of my friends, then fantastic. I don't have to do anything else. People will flock to it and use it. That's not the case. You have to have content on social software sites for people to be able to interact in exactly the same way that people interact in the real world, in a social manner.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
If somebody bores you, you're not going to talk to them. It's the same in social software sites.
I don't know. Sometimes you do.
Yeah, no, fair play. One very quick thing before we wind up. You've got a thing where you can import your Gmail address book.
Before you say anything, I am fully aware.
Backpedal.
There's a little problem with that. Unfortunately, if anybody does sign up, for God's sake, don't use it at the moment. Because they should have actually put a warning saying it will import your entire address book.
Yeah, I mean, I've got no problem with the feature. It's just that, you know, I obviously was under the impression that when I imported my address book, it would look through it for people who are already members of BuddyPing rather than emailing everyone I've ever met and saying, would you like to be a BuddyPing subscriber? So
can I just say publicly, I'm really sorry about that.
Do we forgive him?
No,
yes. You are entirely forgiven. Absolutely understood. No problem. All I'd like to think we say is, this is about to send 4,000 emails. Are you sure you want to do that?
You don't know 4,000 people.
Which, I'll that right now.
Thank you very much.
Hang on a second. Okay, just to wrap up, where's the future of BuddyPing going, Justin? Where do you want to see it go forward?
As the things which I highlighted before, I mean, the big thing about social networking sites is about really content which is driven by the users themselves. I mean, you know, if you go to BuddyPing right now, you'll see that, you know, the system does work. You know, most of the elements that I want to have there are working. The elements which I want to have going forward is to make it open so that basically anybody can write their own mobile application, and, you know, whether it's location-based or whether it's just a general mobile application.
What's BuddyPing written in, by the way?
It's based on PHP, and it's in Drupal CMS.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It just basically allows me to be able to not have to worry about, you know, little niggly things like updating people's passwords and profiles and stuff like that. Drupal just handles it for me. It's pretty cool to do that for me.
Nice one.
It seems like a great example of an open source project that's, you know, sprung up from nowhere. And we wish you all the best with it in the future.
And a Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas.
Have a great Christmas, Justin. Thanks for coming on the show.
Catch you later.
Bye, guys. I'll speak to you soon.
Take it easy, mate.
Bye-bye. Ping me.
Bye.
So, you get to a new city.
Yep.
You then text
one person, no, which is the system.
Yeah.
And, it then sends texts everywhere.
Yeah.
Which saves you texting all your mates to say I'm in town, yeah?
And then after
is that the idea?
You're a millionaire.
And, no, it texts all your mates who are near you.
Yes.
Because they also texted Buddy Ping previously.
But what if they live in the town? They're not going to text to say, I'm here.
Isn't it more a case of you go out for the evening and say, I'm on Broad Street in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And then all your mates are on, which would become very laborious.
But surely you'd just call your mates and say you're coming out to Broad. I mean, you wouldn't go there on your own, surely.
The thing is, that let's expand it.
Yeah.
Instead of just talking about Buddy Ping, which is one. I mean, I know he thinks it's a social network. I don't think it's so much a social network.
No,
but looking at things like LinkedIn and all that kind of thing, do we think they're any useful?
No.
Do we think they're any use?
I think they're a monstrous pile of arse.
Massive, massive fucking pointless waste of time.
I mean, LinkedIn, right? ACK persuaded me to join it. I gave it a go.
Yeah, that's the other thing that ACK spammed us all with, isn't it? Yeah.
That was me explicitly choosing to spam
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
And mind you, I bought some really great Viagra from the other day.
I gave LinkedIn a go, because previously there was another one which Rob Annable was into.
Tribe.
And before that, they was walled in.
And basically...
filled in, it was called.
I decided to give it another go, because Tribal, whatever it was called, was fine.
You really do like social networks, don't you?
No, I tried it, and I thought, okay, so now
tried
I know
a little bit of everything.
That what people think about me, because I've written lovely comments on my profile, what can I do now? And there were lots of kind of self-obsessed people who wanted to post lots of photos of each other and of themselves. And hang on. And what I found was that it just descended into the same old cliques that you find in chat rooms, and you find in IRC, and you find on fucking
MySpace.
Usenet. You know
yes.
what I mean? It was just all the same old stuff.
Absolutely. I would agree with you. For things like Tribe.net and MySpace and so on and so forth, I'm not particularly interested in social networks from a social perspective, but LinkedIn, I think, is different. Because it's there to help professionals make business contacts with one another.
Is it, though? All right. Sorry, that's his stated aim. But is it ever going to really work?
The thing is,
a couple of times I have, in the past, come into contact with someone who I wanted to know a bit more about, and so I punched them into LinkedIn and found out that I know a bloke who knows them. So there's kind of a way
what
of getting an introduction to them.
The thing is...
It gives you something to start off talking about. It gives you someone who you can speak
shut
to
shut up
say,
and let him
what
talk.
Do you think about this bloke?
I suppose.
I think social networks are pointless. Totally pointless. Because it's an artificial social connection between people. Right?
Why is it artificial?
Right,
Because you're texting your mates who are your mates,
because,
right?
Because I'm with ACK in this in the fact that... A, it's totally fucking pointless for social, as in, you know, friends. Things like LinkedIn are aimed towards, you know, for professional use.
Yep.
So talking to other people. So the example is, imagine somebody like Justin. He's got Buddy Ping and he wants to go to a VC firm. I'm not saying that he does, but
what's
imagine
a VC
that he
firm?
Does. Venture capital.
Right.
Right? And let's say he knows you, Age.
The Viet Cong.
let's say...
He fucking won.
Let's say he knows you.
Sorry.
Let's say he knows you, Age. And then you, this is fucking unlikely, know someone in venture capital.
Right.
It's unlikely because you don't know what fucking VC stands for. Right? So, it seems this whole LinkedIn philosophy is that it's all right for him to talk to this VC person because he can go through you. And to me, it doesn't work that way. I don't think enough people will... Yeah, I don't think it's valid to go up to someone and say, hi, can I talk to you because you know my mate?
I've got this feeling that there are people who do work off... A very small number of people, mostly who are salesmen, who work off the, oh, yeah, weren't you at Johnny's New Year party a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
And but for those problem, people, I, but, it might
but,
work.
But the problem with this, but, though, the problem with this... Because
you're a rampant capitalist, is that what you're saying?
Well, there's nothing wrong with being a company.
No,
it's whether you're a tosser.
No, go on, and then I'm going to follow up.
The problem with this, right, is that it seems that social networks are there for people who don't have so good social skills.
No,
right?
I don't agree.
Because it enables them to put in place. If you wanted to get to know, like, let's see, if Justin went to know this VC person that we're putting this example, he'd just go and talk to him anyway.
Is that
no,
the Viet Cong
wouldn't,
or a venture capitalist?
Why wouldn't
he? No, because... He doesn't know him. He doesn't know that he exists. Now, the point
but what's to stop him going to other VC people?
Well, nothing.
Where's the validity in someone in him going to this VC person just because he knows A?
No, hang on. My point wasn't anything to do with that. What I was disputing was the fact that you said it's for people who aren't very good at social interaction.
No, that's one option.
I don't think it is. I think it's for people who don't have a natural connection, and they just have lots and lots of front enough to go.
Let me tell you,
hey,
no,
you're at Johnny's party. I know you. That's
well,
what
why
I
wouldn't you speak to him at the party?
For. That's not what it's
but
for.
But there are people out there like
that's
that.
That's not what it's for.
I bet you, I know it's for.
The point is that if I want to approach a VC guy, I don't know any VC blokes, right? So I could just go and search the net for them, or I could basically say to my friends, "Do any of you know any decent VC guys?"
Right.
So I could say to Aid, do you know VC? You go, yeah. And I'll go, is he a good bloke or is he a twat?
Yeah, but
if
you
he's
could
a
just.
Twat, I'm not going to press.
Well, you could just fucking email
why
me.
Why do you need a network to do that?
Because I don't want to have to mail all of my friends and then have them mail all of their friends.
I don't think that's the aim of the network.
It is. No, that's exactly
I know what
the
aim of the network is
for.
To make fucking money. That's the aim of the network.
Doesn't make any money.
Yeah,
I tell you what, you know.
The aim of the social network is.
Make money for its owner.
It seems to be that it's taking one group of people who know each other. And linking it with another group of people who know each other through mutual acquaintances, right? That's not that. That seems to be
spurious links.
And the basic concept behind it is
no.
The basic concept behind it is that you can.
You're right.
You're expanding your group. That's the purpose of a social network.
You can't just construct what you think a social network is and then say that's a bollocks idea and then imagine that you've dismissed what social networks are.
Well,
sounds
from
like
what
I,
social networks that
what
I've used,
just
that's exactly what it is.
What I've just described is the way I think a lot of people will use LinkedIn because it's the way I use LinkedIn. It's a way of me saying, do any of you guys know any decent VC people? Or can you ask your mates if they know any VC people? But I can punch it in and get that in 1 second rather than waiting 8 weeks.
Let's forget about LinkedIn. Let's forget about LinkedIn, okay? You've given a decent use case for LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Some I use it to clear a chesty cough.
That's LinkedIn.
Oh, some right. of us might not use it for that, but, you know, it's worked out well for you. And maybe I'll tell you what, in a year's time, based on my fucking bullshit about PC chips, I'll probably be using it in a year's time. But in general, social networking, it's just... I know that I described Flock as a bunch of cats tied together, but that's how it feels. It's just all this stuff crammed together. It just feels... And people are going, oh, it's lovely. It must be great, because everybody's hyping it.
It's
the
kind of,
it's
the kind of thing that people who wear orange sunglasses who bang on about blogs and podcasting.
Yeah.
They bang on about social networks as well. It's for the cool kids.
You've got a blog. You podcast.
Yeah, but I don't bang on about blogging culture and podcasting culture.
Yeah,
and the blogosphere.
Yeah.
Next, any time you hear anyone say that word, then you stab
it in
the face.
One
argument is that we shouldn't dismiss it just because all of the wankers are using are banging on about it. Because blogs are cool, and there's a lot of wankers who go on about it.
Yeah.
But I think... From my own perspective, social networks, there's not enough...
Kill me.
It seems too artificial to me.
I agree.
It may be good for some people, and I suggest... I predict that for a minority of people, for a certain minority of people, it's good, but I think a lot of people do what exactly you were saying. You use it for a little while, and then you basically forget
it. I'll tell you what,
it.
Give it 2 years, all the shit will wither away, and there'll be something left over that's maybe useful, but right now it's just too... caked in hype.
And what happens when you've got one
can
group of people
wither?
What happens when you get one group of people who talk to another group of people, right? And then they meet another group of people, and through the nature of the network it keeps going until you basically know everybody in the
perhaps
England.
Have
keeps
a war.
Going, yeah.
And then there's no network.
Like this segment.
It's just the internet.
It's Christmas.
It's Christmas.
And so it's time to give something away.
Yep.
But as usual, we can't just give it away.
Is it your chair,
actually? Yeah, it's behind the sofa.
All right.
Yeah, so we can't just give it away, so we're going to have a competition.
Yeah!
Yes,
and
indeed.
What on earth, boys, are we going to call this competition?
here's the thing, right? We've had a bag of swag sent from Novell, your friendly Linux supplier.
And other
is it swag
sources.
Oh, no, just this month. Just this episode, it's Novell only.
This episode is just Novell stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Novell this time around. Thank you very much, Novell, in fact.
Thank you very much, Novell.
Thanks,
yes,
Novell.
Thank you very much. Very Christmas spirited of you. So we're going to call it anyway.
Fantastic.
Stupid hat for corporate tat.
So stupid hat for corporate tat.
So let's have an explanation of what that means.
I was going to say, explain the rules to us then.
We haven't actually discussed the rules.
No, the rules
we've
are
we've got
these,
a basic
right?
idea.
Ack knows what they are.
I know what the rules are. The rules are, take a picture of yourself
with
in
a stupid
hat.
And then we'll send you some
corporate
hat. Yes.
Simple as that.
Yeah, take
no
a picture.
No offence, Novell. We love the stuff, by the way. Some of us love it a little too much, but anyway.
Yeah.
But send your emails with you wearing a stupid hat. The stupider, the better. Really.
And in the best location as well.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, we did consider calling this segment... tit for tat.
Yeah.
So if you can get any of that in as well, that'll help.
But, you know, I don't want to see Mr. Penn's tits, to be honest.
No, so, you're in a stupid hat, send it to show@lugradio.org, get some corporate.
Can I make a suggestion?
I think it would be even cooler if people had the word Lug Radio somewhere on their hat.
Well, that'd be nice, but...
Because that, what you know, that's going to win some points with us.
There's going to be some people opening up the GIMP now, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, doctor your hat. Just take a picture of your hat and stick fucking...
I'm Dr. Hat.
Dr. Hat.
Fantastic. So send it to show@lugradio.org.
Yes.
Or describe it on 0870.
Okay, guess what, listeners? We've got a 5-minute update.
Not yes, another one.
I know.
How many is this now?
Two.
We thought he was the first one. We've just said to him... just a second ago when we rung him up to see if he's all right and check what he had for breakfast.
Yeah.
But Gnome got in first, apparently.
No. KDE got in first because it was Jeff Ward talking to us about Ubuntu.
Kubuntu. Ah. Well, it's kind of like a weird hermaphrodite KDE.
No, it's just Kubuntu, mate.
No, it's Kubuntu.
So, anyway, let's get a 5-minute update from Aaron Sago. Find out what's going on with KDE.
Hi, Aaron. How's it going?
Oh, good. How are you doing?
Not so bad. So, it's been a while since we last spoke to you.
Yeah, it has.
And
how long ago was that, actually?
I don't know. When was it?
About 10 seconds ago.
Yeah, not when I just wrote a second ago. Yeah, 6 months, something like
I'd
that?
I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, something that. Like that. So, tell us what's been going on in your world since we last spoke to you.
What,
with reference
KDE
to KDE,
split?
Yeah.
Yeah, with KDE, we're assuming
with
that.
With KDE, you don't want to know my personal love life or anything.
Not really.
Well, right? I don't know. Well, that might be more interesting.
Top 5 things on my list. Well, let's see. Since then, in KDE, obviously, we just recently released KDE 3.5. We've also started on KDE 4 development, which is pretty momentous for us. Other than that, it's been pretty much, as things have gone in times past, continually updating, our feature set or applications, attending conferences, yada, 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 yada.
Yada,
as you say, the more things change, the more things stay the same.
Is that yada, 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 or is it K, yada, K, yada, K, yada?
Kiada, kiada, kiada.
Is it very configurable?
So, you said, I think the thing that people are interested in, obviously, is KDE4. Yeah, and Linus is your best friend now. So, what's going on with KDE4? I mean, how much development has gone into it so far, and where's it going?
Well, right now, the primary efforts have been going on with the actual libraries. Obviously, that's the foundational point, so it kind of had to start from there. Can't really build the applications until you've got the underlying frameworks there. So when we met in Spain for our World Conference, we actually decided that we were going to redesign the way we laid out our libraries so they're a little bit more clear, a little bit more coherent.
Right.
We were going to try to do things like do unit testing across as many of the basic classes as we could.
Yeah.
To actually get some of that unit test, the automated testing happening, so we can live up to the guarantees we try and deliver a little bit better. I mean, as the code base grows and grows and grows, it gets more and more difficult to do it, by hand. So that was, I think, one of the more interesting things that's come along.
Ah, come on, dude. Don't tell us about unit testing. Tell us about cool new technology.
You asked about KDE4, and that's what we're actually doing right now. We're doing all that boring, boring, hard stuff that has to happen in the first few months. if you talk to me in a few months, then we'll have really cool stuff. Actually, Zach Rusin is popping by my place because I'm in his neighborhood, being all of just a few thousand miles away.
Will he be wearing his smoking jacket?
Well, of course. Does he ever leave home without it? I don't know. He'll be kicking back in my place for a couple of weeks, and we're going to be hacking on some of the graphics capabilities, and that'll be in KDE4.
Cool.
So, some of that we've been waiting on features in Qt as well, because they released 4.1, and that's got a SVG Tiny rendering library in it, for example, and it's got a number of performance fixes and a number of new features. So Qt has also been changing in response to some of the things we've been needing and in response to some of the things that their clients have been needing. So there's been kind of a co-evolutionary thing that's happening.
Right,
it's kind of, I'd love to say, wow, here's a installable demo, go play with it. But right now we're doing the hard, boring stuff that really needs to happen to make sure that we can do the exciting, cool stuff in the new year.
Okay, so I've been a GNOME user for a little while now. I started off my Linux
life. Isn't that GNOME? Isn't that GNOME user?
Yeah, that's
that,
right.
On that email from your last show.
My GKDE.
Sorry, go ahead.
I started off my life though as a GKDE user, and I want to know from you, basically excite me as to why I should switch over to KDE, because our man Linus, or whatever you want to call him, seems to have
heathen.
Basically come out fairly strongly as a KDE sexual. So why should I switch sides?
Why should you switch sides? See, that's a loaded question. That assumes their sides. And that's something that I personally, and not the only one, fortunately, but really trying to get away from this whole concept that there are sides. We both are trying to create, I'm talking about GNOME and KDE primarily here, but I mean there's dozens of projects, whether you're looking at XFCE or Firefox or OpenOffice or whomever. There is we're all trying to make an open source desktop. Okay.
Yeah.
So number one, I don't agree with the concept that there are sides and factions and whatnot. I think that's a construct that people build because it's fun and exciting to talk about. You know, the same reason why people go and gossip down at the bar. But it's very counterproductive, and a lot of, I mean, we can see the flames that have happened in the last few days. Just anything come of that? No. Now that said, why would you use KDE as opposed to anything else? And I prefer to say I'm a Windows user. Why do I want to use KDE?
Okay.
But why would you use KDE? Because it does what you need it to do.
Okay.
If you're looking to, you know, burn KDE, I'd say, well, hey, K3B. I mean, it's really the best app out there. You want to manage your digital photo collection. I love Digicam. Audio, Amarok. I mean, it's the applications, right? We've spent a lot of time working on frameworks so we can build these really cool applications.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's like, well, what do you want to do? And let's find applications that do that well for you. And we find a lot of people find those applications happen to be written on the KDE and Qt platform.
But isn't there some kind of sort of philosophical difference that sums up?
Yeah.
You know, the two things. Oh, that was eloquent of me, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, there are philosophical differences. We have different, aims and you know, people that we kind of develop for. I think, you know, GNOME is aiming for usability GNOME. In the sense as they define it.
Yeah.
And we're also aiming for usability in the sense that we define it, which is allowing people to actually use their computers and be able to do what they need, get it done.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we provide, you know, is often more than you as an individual user will need, but taken across the broad spectrum of our user base, it's actually a pretty well-fitting glove. I mean, hell, there's things we could do a lot better with our user interface here and there. It's a work in progress. You know, 4 million lines of code, it's a big project.
I'll give it a go.
But I think from release to release, we've actually gotten better with the interfaces, that things are starting to straighten out. And we also find that a lot of the people that actually ship the code, like you look at what Lynn Spire or Zandros or Souza, you put them next to each other, or Mandriva, you put them next to each other, and you can see that they've taken the raw framework that we deliver as a project and have actually formed it into the image of what they see the personas for that represent their customer base.
Okay,
cool.
And that's really how we design.
Recently, there's started to be a focus towards speed and performance. Is that something that KDE is focusing on? KDE 4 is focusing on?
KDE 4, certainly. I mean, that's been a new focus. We've been focusing on that all throughout the KDE 3 series. I don't know if you've seen the recent blog by Lubos Lunak, but he's kind of our performance meister. And he's actually got KDE 4 starting up in around the same time as XFCE starts up, which is fairly significant, given how fast KDE's start up in the past, or not, as the case may be.
It's pretty cool.
So, and that's in combination as well with working with the font config developers, where there's a lot of issues. So it's not just KDE, but the lower-level stacks. We're starting to work more with people in X and people in doing things like font config, and because there are bottlenecks there, too, that reflect on what we do.
Yeah,
we need to work together as a community, and that's happening more, which is really good.
Cool.
Qt 4, for instance, it comes with around just itself around a 30% smaller footprint memory-wise.
Yeah, that's good.
Starts up faster, et cetera. So it's early days. I don't want to give, you know, exact numbers. It will be exactly 248% faster.
You need speed.
But the way things are going it certainly looks like we're on track for a lighter and a more nimble desktop.
That's what we want. Just to wrap up, unfortunately, we've overstepped our 5 minutes. Just one final question.
Sure.
There's a lot of discussion at the moment about things like the Tango project and, of course, Free Desktop and a lot of these underlying technologies. How is KDE buying into this with KDE 4?
Well, Tango, obviously they're engaging in a free desktop.org spec, which is the icon specification, which we already support.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We've actually talked about, we'd really nice to have common, you know, icon names, but no one's actually gone in and done the drudge work of coming up with names and defining, you know, writing it down. I mean, that's typing in a text editor, icon names.
But what about important stuff like Cairo and Avahi and things like that? I mean, it seems like the collaboration seems to be unfairly... I mean, yeah, an icon theme would be nice, but there doesn't seem to be any collaboration on unified themes for unified, you know, discoverability.
I mean, we collaborate with X.org. That's a fairly huge project, and that's also freedesktop.org these days.
Yeah.
Cairo, however, I mean, that, while it's being developed around freedesktop.org, really isn't what we'd call a freedesktop.org standard. This is at the heart of the ill of what's going on with freedesktop.org right now. And we actually, we recently had a meeting in Portland, which was why the list that Linus was on was created, actually, to discuss a lot of these issues. And we've actually got a position paper that I'm actually drafting. We're going through several revisions of it on the list that talks about a way to take freedesktop.org and apply processes to it that are stakeholder-based, that are lightweight, that's not going to bog it down. We're not trying to turn it into, you know, a standards committee, because that's not how we work. But we need a way to actually introspect into the community and go, well, what really is, you know, a community-involved project? What is a cross-desktop, you know, project? What is applicable to more than you know, a few people? Cairo, for instance, interesting project. We've got Arthur in Qt, and it does everything we need, and there could be a Cairo backend to Arthur, et cetera, but it's not really applicable to where we are.
But do you believe
well, you're not using Cairo, that's, you know, bad, you know, not doing free desktop. That's kind of, you know... That's missing the mark. And I don't blame you folks or the rest of the community. It's because we don't do a good enough job of telling the story from freedesktop.org.
So,
and we're actually right now, like I said, we've actually got a concrete, this is what we're going to do plan, drafted up that we all agreed on in principle and in detail at the meeting, and we're just drafting how to communicate that out actually go out and enact it, you know, enact it. And I think at that point, we're going to start seeing that, whoa, we actually do have a lot more cooperation than people considered. And a lot of the things that certain people are trying to push forward as, you know, cooperative ventures were really, really interesting projects that were specific to a specific niche.
I mean, do you believe, though, that, I mean, in terms of the free desktop thing, I mean, I think a lot of people would think that Cairo is a free desktop standard, but there seems to be a bit of paranoia within the KDE camp about free desktop, because a lot of the projects on free desktop were pioneered by some of the GNOME people.
A lot of them are pioneered by KDE people.
They are. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But there seems to be some paranoia from speaking to some people involved with some of the free desktop stuff. There seems to be a difficulty in getting people, KDE people, to buy into the concept of a free desktop.org project.
I think you'll find that not just in KDE, but elsewhere as well. But
sure,
I'll talk to it from the KDE perspective. You bet. There are people that, I wouldn't call it paranoia, I call it healthily suspicious. And the reason is because people will say things like, well, Cairo is a cross-desktop, you know, standard platform, whatever, blah, 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 when it isn't. And that gets people feeling like, well, are we going to be forced to do things that aren't really what we want to do? And again, this goes right back to the problem that we've got a few people in the projects who are really passionate about this stuff, the cross-desktop stuff.
Yeah.
We've got the most people are, like, way so busy doing what they're doing already, they don't have time to breathe, let alone get involved with yet another, you know, free desktop, something or other. So they just don't keep abreast of what's going on. And so there's a communication issue that we don't get the right people all the time involved.
Sure,
and we don't communicate out what's happening in freedesktop.org in a way. The only way to really keep up with it is to actually get heavily involved, and that's the problem. And you know what, we do have, you know, occasional people here and there, not just in KDE, they're like, you know, we should have, you know, grand walls between everything. And that's not productive, and you know, not really where we're headed. But again, this goes right back to freedesktop.org as an organization. I mean, the .org stands for organization.
Yeah.
It really lacks organization. it has an organic organization, but not one that really serves the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish. And we address that in great detail. In Portland, and it was great because we had, you know, Waldo Bastian, who is one of, you know, the people from freedesktop.org, one of the, you know, main
legend, in fact.
Yep. We had Daniel Stone. We had, you know, we had Jeff Wall from GNOME. We had, you know, George Stikos from KDE, et cetera, et cetera.
The
we had Marco from Trolltech. I mean, it was a huge meeting of really great people. And we all sat there and we looked at each other and went, we all agree. This needs to be fixed. This needs to change. And here's a great way to change it. And we all agreed on that.
Fantastic.
So I think that over the next year or so, as we implement these things, we get to see the you know, the results of it, we're going to start to see these kind of questions be answered implicitly.
Yeah, definitely,
sounds very promising.
It does sound promising, and you guys are doing a fantastic job. We're certainly all eager to see what KD4 is going to look like.
Can't wait.
Keep up the great work, Aaron. It's always great to catch up with you.
Yeah, likewise.
And I'll see you in February.
Yeah.
See you later. See you later.
It's much warmer than it is here, anyways. It's -9 now.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, it's not quite that cold here. So
well, I look forward to LA. See you there, man.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
Merry, merry hypershite.
Merry hypershite.
Mince pies and all that shit. Anyway.
Yeah, so it's Christmas.
Anyway, it's hype or shite, not hypershite.
Hype or shite.
That's
hype or shite.
Hype or shite. So it's merry.
So hypershite. Which number of three is this?
Merry.
Four.
Is it fifth of three?
Three plus one.
Yeah,
this is the fourth in the increasingly inaccurately named hypershite trilogy.
This is the encore.
Is that because hypershite isn't hype or shite?
Yeah, well, it could be. Although I think pretty much everything we say is shite.
Okay. So what's this one about?
We're going to talk today about eye candy.
Oh, I like a bit of eye candy.
This was inspired from a discussion on the forums. Forums.lookradio.org.
On the what?
The forums. You obviously not familiar with them.
No.
So, do we think that pretty interfaces and all this kind of all these bells and whistles, are they important?
Let me take a step back from the question.
Oh, okay.
You've got a girlfriend, right? This is a generic kind of scenario.
I hope it's not sexist.
You got a girlfriend.
You have a partner. Huh? For aid.
She plays grade 8 piano, right? She earns 60.
How old is my girlfriend?
Don't know, but she plays.
Has she got big tits?
Yeah. Right. She's earned £60,000 a year. She's really intellectual. You get on with her really well, but she's got one eye and two mouths, right?
Now
tell me, is eye candy hype or shite?
Well, I've got one eye and two mouths.
No, enough of that.
Yeah, no.
What do you define eye candy as? I mean, do you define anything more than a text console to be eye candy?
I think it's the difference between anything KDE or GNOME and FVWM.
Are you talking anything at run level 5?
What does that mean?
Run level 5 is X. Oh. I thought my number 5 was shutting down.
No.
Anyway.
Right. I can't believe you didn't know that.
Here's what eye candy is. Eye candy is Project Looking Glass. It's where people create things that look whizzy for no point whatsoever.
Hang on. How is it different in Debian?
Run levels are different for Debian.
Don't be silly. You couldn't possibly do that.
In Red Hat, isn't the normal run level 3?
3 is text, 5 is X.
Listen, shut up about DEFCON Orange, all right? Let's just get on with...
Just get on with it. I don't understand run
levels. My definition...
I don't want to either. I don't need to.
My definition of eye candy here is, if you've got a program that works and you can use it, is it worth investing extra effort to make it look better when you don't strictly need to make it work?
Yes, because it's nice to have things that look pleasant. I think most people...
But you've got to draw the line at an Apple Mac.
Hang on. Most people would believe, I reckon, that if things look better, and often they look better because they function better, you know. Because good design isn't just about things looking good, it's about them working good.
That's why we're talking about eye candy, not just good design.
Yeah.
Good design's a prerequisite. Good design's important. The point is, if it works well and it's well designed, do you invest time and effort in making it look nicer, although it doesn't actually improve the functionality of the product?
Alright, so do you give a window a useless drop shadow, for example?
You see, this is the interesting point, because a lot of people would say, that's just eye candy. But a drop shadow makes the window appear clearer.
You started him now.
Right. See?
That's a bad choice.
That's shadow. I mean, I'd say the example is rounded corners on windows. They're not really that important, but they look nice.
I mean, is the example not... I can use mutt in the command line, and therefore Thunderbird is eye candy.
No.
Is that too far?
Of course not.
Right. I'd say so, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, because there are two different ways of working.
People's usage of it.
I know certain ginger people.
Hang on. The text in a command line interface that aids other people's... of it, so.
The thing is, I think the example you gave, Matt, was a good one, because a lot of people use that as an example of eye candy, where it actually isn't, because it's got a legitimate purpose. I never really realised it until I thought about it and used it.
All right.
But things like rounded corners in windows and different themes and stuff like that.
In Windows Vista, everything's bloody transparent for some reason, which just makes
it harder to look
at. I tell
you what, I'd like proper window transparency in GNOME.
You've got
a transparent shell window, but then you've got Thunderbird underneath
it. Things move behind it.
It's like,
yeah, and that works with X transparency.
All right, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, is doing things like that. I mean, basically, the way I see it is...
It doesn't have functional...
It doesn't improve the function, but it makes it more... It makes it better to look at. People will more appreciate the look of the thing.
Okay. Well, haven't Apple based the whole marketing strategy on exactly that?
In your library... Yep. I don't know. In your library, you've got a cardboard cutout of Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I certainly have.
Does that improve the function of your library?
No.
You haven't, so...
I have, it's weird. It's not in the library, it's in the dining room.
Oh, it used to be in the library.
But it was in the library when Matt lost.
Why are you
out.
Fucking 14?
So I fully support your right to have a Sarah Michelle Gellar cutout, right? Even though
you shouldn't.
It's
you
pure
should
eye candy for your house, yeah.
Yeah.
I have probably a picture of something on a wall somewhere.
Aye.
And, you it's know,
John, sticky
basically,
stuff.
My point,
Top Girl.
My point is that I think it's fine, you know, if there are people there who are able to put the work in, I think it's fine to make things look good. But what my problem is where eye candy becomes superfluous, where you end up with things like Project Looking Glass. Which,
where you pimp your ex.
Yeah, you're basically just using graphics processing power, and then you're desperately trying to hunt around for a useful...
I disagree, because I'd say that if we're going to lambast Aid for comparing Mutt and Thunderbird, you've got to apply that same philosophy to Project Looking Glass. It's a different way of working. I agree with you that eye candy that is just totally pointless... That doesn't actually have any benefit to
How
design.
Do you find pointless?
Well, I'd say eye candy's pointless when it doesn't have any benefit to design.
What about transparency?
Or usability. I'd say the transparency is possibly useful.
It is useful to see what's underneath.
If it's useful for you to see what's underneath, then fair enough. But I think when people talk about eye candy, well, certainly in the context of this discussion, it's about things that don't have a benefit to design usability and are just there purely for good looks.
Yes.
Is it legitimate? I'd say it is.
Of course it
because
is.
People
because
people like
it. Nice things that look like.
People
like
attractive interface.
But the
it's purely subjective, isn't it?
The opposite side of the coin, the argument against that, is that people spent time and effort putting that in, and they could have spent time and effort actually improving the product instead.
No, because now we're starting to talk about the universal bank of open source and free software type, which doesn't exist.
Well, I mean, if you're assuming that...
if I'm a graphic artist,
the
eye candy
stuff was
put
in by graphic artists... is that why there tends not to be very much in the way of... the type of eye candy we're talking about in open source software, because we haven't got very many graphic artists.
Name a bit of eye candy, a specific example on either OS X, one specific example, I only want one, or Windows.
A specific example on OS X is if you look at the back of the Windows, they're all very, very lightly striped.
What about when you get into that dock thing at the bottom and they all bubble up?
Two things, neither of those are eye candy, Imo. Do you see how I said IMO there?
I did.
Right.
How are they not
Isn't
eye candy?
Isn't it
right. When you blob along on the dock, right?
No, he's on about when it sucks up and down, aren't you?
Yeah.
Not when you blob along, because that indicates which that's a hoverizer.
Which is a clearer picture of the
right,
icon.
So when you, click
when
on
you
on
close
it goes,
a window and it shrinks
or when
down,
you minimize
when
it,
it shows you where it's gone. Surely that's a good thing.
Possibly.
No? Okay.
And the stripes on the bar help.
I'd say that's definition.
It helps to show you where you are.
That's candy, okay. Let's face it.
So, no, it's not. It's,
I've got one, man.
It absolutely is not. Because
it absolutely is.
Absolutely isn't. And there is one very good reason why it's not. And I don't at all agree with Apple's thinking here. But they have two...
You seem quite passionate
forms.
About it.
I am, because you're talking crap, right? They have two forms of
don't miss
of
your words,
window
Matthew.
Decoration, right? One is brush metal, and one is the stripey shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the reasons... I think brush metal is used if it's... trying to represent some kind of real-world object.
Yes.
And the stripy stuff, if it's just a normal program. Now, I don't agree with that, but they both have a purpose.
Unless you're Safari, which is brush metal, even though it doesn't represent a real object, because it looks cooler.
Curved, the edges of Windows are curved.
Yeah.
That's eye candy.
Right.
That's no fucking purpose
yeah,
whatsoever.
Yeah, but it looks nice.
Yeah, it is. But
the purpose is a genuine one, in that I think really we should be looking to have more of in the open source world, and that is just making people feel comfortable and making them feel like they can trust it, because if...
Give them a cushion.
If you feel as though someone's put the effort in to make something look good, then just as a normal human being, not as one of us, but as just a normal computer user, people tend to feel...
Are we not normal human beings?
Like, they can trust it. No, we're not. We're geeks. And if you go into a shop...
Is that greater than or less than?
If you go into a shop, at Christmas time, and they've really done it up nice, and it's very stylish, and it suits the mood of everything that they're selling, the market they're going for, then you feel comfortable. If it's got fucking fiber optic Christmas trees and dirty Santas,
what you're talking about, your assumption with all of this discussion is consumers.
No, it's not.
In a corporate setting, all of this really doesn't matter.
This is from John O'Shea's corporate experience,
of course. Don't get me wrong. Painted hospital green.
Let me clarify what I'm saying. I agree with you. I think eye candy is really important because I think it's important. I think it's a usability thing because it attracts people to an interface. Mm. And when it attracts people to an interface...
Not all eye candy is.
I think eye candy will attract... If it's attractive and it looks the part and it's not overbearing, it's fine. The problem with a lot of this is that eye candy becomes overbearing and it actually goes away from the original design.
Yeah, but it attracts from the user experience.
But I don't think it's fair to say that eye candy is suitable in all situations because although it's great for consumers, I'd say that... There is a certain performance overhead with nice looking eye candy, and in a corporate setting where it doesn't really matter whether people like the look of the system, they're there to fucking work.
If you're not, I mean, you have to have buy-in from your employees.
No, you don't.
If you want to get people working in a good way, an enthusiastic way, and to actually give a shit about what they're doing,
do you honestly think that people aren't going
to
work somewhere because the interface looks a little?
No, but I think they will be
more productive if they enjoy what they're doing. I agree. They have to work, and if they say, "I'm not working with that interface," you just beat them till they do, or you fire them. But people are likely to be more productive if they're working in a happy environment.
Oh, completely.
And therefore you want to make them as happy as possible.
Completely.
And therefore you want to make them as comfortable with the interface they use.
But you don't want to require that they have a dual processor ATI graphics card to do it.
Sure.
You just want
or
to
any
make
brand.
Sure
and
that,
and
sponsoring ATI cards.
That's the point, is that I believe that eye candy can be done on a level that is affordable in corporate settings. And then you've got insane eye candy. And that's the thing. I agree with you that you've got to keep your employees and your punters happy. The main crossover seems to be when eye candy gets in the way of design, which we've already said, and is it suitable in all situations?
Is that a soapbox you're standing on there, Johnny? Is that a soapbox?
What's your view?
What's my view? I like it, but I don't think it's the be-all and end-all.
Right, but you think it?
I'd rather have it look pretty, but if it's not pretty, but it still does a job, fine.
All right, so should we go through the motions? High pull shite, Johnny.
Someone complain the fact that we always say
shite.
I was just trying to think of it.
Good or bad. So
should we pick one or the other? Let's be adventurous. I think it's actually you can't pick
you can't.
Good,
no,
can you?
No, you can't pick good because there's no good option.
I think it's good personally.
Mm. Yep. Okay, you think it's worthwhile spending time and resources making something look pretty at the expense of functionality?
No, that's a different question.
Just
mould the question around.
Assuming that eye candy doesn't get in the way in terms of the design, the optimal design for the software, no objection. I think it's a good thing.
And it doesn't.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, if you say,
well, no one's going to disagree.
You can say, okay, you can have this thing, and then for free, you can have exactly the same thing but a bit nicer. No one's going to go, no, I'll have the shit one. That's a stupid.
No. But
if you,
no,
nothing's
right.
ever free because it takes up resources.
But nobody's going to have something if it looks the business and doesn't do the fucking job.
No, but is it worthwhile sacrificing a small bit of functionality?
Apple.
Is it worthwhile sacrificing a small bit of functionality to make something look better?
Depends on what you mean by.
It's actually,
that's the question.
That's the point. It's a, you know, you've actually got to, if you have to give something up, if you have to make a sacrifice in terms of functionality to make something look better, should you always do that? Never do that? Do it sometimes? What's your decision?
Right, that's the question then.
But it's not functionality
you
give up, is it? Not system resources that you give up.
Well, either. If you had to give something up to have something look better.
If you've got to sacrifice,
is it
high for eye candy? I think it really depends on the level of sacrifice.
It does.
If it's a case of... The user can still find what they want to do, and they can still do what they do fairly easily. But
what if it makes it slower?
But it's very, very tiny bit slower, or it's not quite.
But
and this
like
is where your consumer corporate thing comes in, because for a corporate thing, then the functionality's got to be there. But for a consumer, if you're doing like say a nice little photo album bit of software, then it might be more important for it to look nice because it gives them more trust in it. But for a corporate desktop, like you say, okay, you know the functionality.
From the way you were phrasing that, though, it sounds like you think eye candy is important. But you're not prepared to give up all that much in order to get it. You would rather have things other than eye candy instead of eye candy if the choice had to be made.
No, I think I accept that eye candy is second to usability.
Extra functionality or good-lookingness?
It's second to functionality.
Okay.
But if you can't get to your functionality well, or your
if it gets in the way of functionality, that's bad.
No, but if your interface doesn't look any good and makes people feel uncomfortable using it, then they won't use the functionality anyway, maybe.
So you'd be prepared to give up more function than Jono would?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's making the assumption that you can't have a usable interface without eye candy.
No, it's not. It's making the assumption that that consumers, when they come to a computer, trust things and feel comfortable because it looks nice.
Consumers care more about eye candy than they do about usability.
Well, no, I think they consider eye candy and they don't even know what usability is.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I care more about performance, and I'd rather have more functionality, more speed in, and sacrifice a little bit of prettiness, but I wouldn't want to go too far and use mutt.
I think I agree with Aid, bizarrely enough.
Shut up. I'm glad that you agree, but...
I mean, it varies, doesn't it? It varies from situation, which is exactly what I was saying. I mean, it varies from...
For consumers. Subjective.
Yeah.
The end of this wonderful Christmas show
is
upon us.
Merry Christmas again.
Merry Christmas.
We're doing the outro now, are we?
Yes, pass me a mince pie, Matthew.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't want you to regurgitate it.
The bloke goes to the doctor... Doctor, I've got a mince pie up my arse. Says, oh, I've got some cream for that.
Ooh.
Hey.
Ooh, nice.
Hang on.
Oh, that worked. Oh.
Sorry, I was...
Anyway, it's
time for the voicemails and the emails.
Let's do emails first.
I'm going to start off. Terry Lewis has written in.
Hello, Terry.
Terry. He's written in regarding the Bill Hilf interview. So I'm going to read this, and then we'll have a little chat about the Bill Hilf interview. Bilf, yes.
Bill, I'd like to befriend
interview.
You.
Would you?
Listened to episode 3 last night and wanted to comment on the Bill Hilf interview. Always wondered if the show would ever, such as Log Radio, would ever
Hang on,
to...
Did you say episode 3?
Yeah.
Does that mean this is episode 4?
No, this is 5. He's incorrect. All right. Assertion.
Yeah, right. It was actually episode 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. I always wondered if a show such as Log Radio would ever get to interview a Microsoft employee. And lo and behold... I thought Bill was both straight to the point and very honest, and about time too. Great interview, it opened my eyes. Now if only the FOSS community could get a grip and have the same attitude with corporations like Microsoft, a better world it would be. The FOSS community complain and joke about Microsoft's FUD campaigns, yet do exactly the same, in my opinion, sometimes worse.
Microsoft should be our mentor.
Now, that's one viewpoint.
Now, to be fair, we've had quite a few emails about it. Some people thought that we were a little easy on him.
A little soft on him.
But our reasoning was that we had plenty of opportunities, I suppose, to rib him, but what would have been the point?
Well, he's not responsible for every ill that Microsoft has commissioned.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
We spoke to him about what he really told us.
Thanks for the email.
Thank you for the email.
On the flip side, I have to say that he said that we shouldn't condemn Microsoft for the stuff they've done in the past. We should treat Microsoft as they are now. So I'm looking at them censoring a report that mentions free software and taking all the bits that mention free software out of that report. So
Bill, that was not Bill said. That wasn't what Terry said.
Okay. Who's next?
Are Matthew. We going
clockwise or
counterclockwise? That way around.
I like it this way around.
I like it.
We've got one from James here who.
James Hilchin.
Just James.
Jimmy?
His email is Oscar the Duck. He says, hey guys, just wanted to pip in that Hypershot is a fine, fine feature. I moved to the US years ago, and hearing people arguing with English accents is fucking fabulous. It's a nice change of pace within the show, too. So I think we should do Hypershot in this episode, and we have.
Okay,
that's exactly it. Oh, you want to change the fucking volume now, do you?
No.
Hang on.
Oh, you want to change it, dear?
No,
you want
to. We're going counterclockwise.
You want to do the zigzag thing?
Oh, no, Jonathan's next. On you go.
Okay. Right.
Oh, just before you go, do you want to nip up to Leeds off?
we've had an email from Clive Behrman, who is the Suzy Linux product marketing manager.
Oh, thanks, Clive.
And he said, fellas,
I can't wait to hear this.
As a 30-something Brit who lives and works in the States, I now have a second job thanks in part to your show. It seems as if I've become the official cultural reference for all things Log Radio. Many hours have been spent decoding your tangential ramblings and suspect theories. Especially hard was Theora and Too Orangey for Crows. Love the show. Keep up the good work. And then he says, P.S. Over the last few weeks, my job has been a little slow, so could you work in Bagpuss to keep me busy?
Clive, it's great to hear from you, but I'd like to just point out my genitals are not tanned.
What?
What?
He said we had tan genital discussions.
Mr. Aquarius.
Yes. An email here from Paul Hendrick about the Liverpool lug.
Oh.
He says, the company I work for, BlueFountain.com, are the proud host of the Liverpool Lug, which we hold monthly at our Liverpool office. What do you think the odds are of getting a mention on your lovely show to help boost interest in the group? I'd say no.
Ooh,
no, I'd say yes. They're not mentioning Linux format or anything, though they're trying to fix that. So, you know.
Go Liverpool Lug.
Linux format, fix that. Liverpool Lug exists. We need to point people to their mailing list sign-up page, which is www.liverpool.lug.org.uk.
Inaugural meeting of the Lug. AA, it's free, we can't nick it.
Nice, okay. Thanks.
Yep, feel free to go to Liverpool Lug, but I wouldn't turn up in your own car if I was you.
Have no wheel trims.
Have they got like a picture of Tux in Kappa clothing?
Goldie looking chain turned up for their summer gig.
Cool. Got an email titled Bloody American Listener. And it's from Robert Abraham, and it says
Abraham.
Yeah, maybe he's related.
I think first of all, he wrote to us before, and secondly, you made exactly that joke last time.
Thank you for pointing that out.
So, ba-dum-tsh.
Very nice. This is Robert Abraham from Texas in the US. It doesn't say Ave, so I didn't think I'd add it in.
Okay.
The reason I said it was from the US is because that you said you didn't have any US listeners.
No? What?
Did we?
Apparently.
When did we say that? We've got a shitload. Sure. They're all on the Frapper map. Which is radio.org/map, incidentally.
Yes.
Don't sign up.
Enormous mind.
What?
I'm really glad that you read my email. I love Distro Wars, Dirty Jokes, and all the filthy gambles.
And
question.
Give us a question.
Can you do some more Distro Wars?
No.
BSD versus Linux?
No.
Okay, all right, we'll cut that one short then. Moving onwards. Thanks for your email, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
I've got an interview here from the startlingly named Ben Conrad.
An interview, eh?
An interview request with Tom Tromey from GCJX/GCJ, interestingly named project.
Snappy.
He says, hey guys, it would be cool to hear an interview with GCJ hacker Tom Tromey. I think he's a really good hacker. You've been a really good hacker this year, have some presents. And it would be interesting to hear an interview with him and hear about what's going on in the JCG world. Well, glad you think so, Ben.
The JCB world?
Yeah.
Me and my dad, me and my dad,
listen to British radio to know what he's talking about.
Thanks for that. We spoke to a free Java guy before, didn't we?
Sven Demirotic.
Sven Demirotic, yes.
We did indeed.
That works out well.
Right, we've got an email from Micah F. Galizia.
What?
Yes. Micah F. Galizia.
Sounds like an international airport. Where are you flying to?
Micah F. Galizia. So, he says, Micah says, hello.
Hello.
Just got my first taste of Lug Radio the other day. Hello. I really enjoyed it, especially the entertaining myth review, so I'll cast a vote in support of keeping the hype or shite.
Hype or shite.
So, another vote for hype or shite.
Yeah, people like the shit.
Excellent. Matt...
Hi.
Matt Rogue, or Roggy, or Roghay, or Rogue, or something.
Roghay.
R-O-double-G-H-E. So Matt Rogue. Thank you, Mr. Rogue. Wrote to us and said, I was wondering if you folks might have a line on some open source software for N-Way. Video conferencing on Linux and Windows.
Right.
Basically, I envision building a Linux server and connecting to it on Windows clients. Have a large family spread out all over the US and would like to get a bunch of us together from time to time on a video conference. My own search on this subject pulled up a bunch of old info on the M-Bone and a lot of web companies / services which you obviously have to pay for. Hoping to build some kind of Linux server that will serve video conferencing run...
K-C-U-C me.
And use... Windows clients.
What's the M bone?
I don't know, it might be MBO.
it's connected to the S bone.
All praise the Lord.
Well, I don't know if it was like, you know, an African guy called Mabone.
That would be Mabone.
Mabone, yes, Mr. Mabone. So, do we know of anything that where Linux runs a server and you've got freely downloadable Windows clients?
Absolutely not.
No. Mate. No, afraid not.
Unless IMAP and Thunderbird.
I mean, no meeting does video conferencing, but that's Linux clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it does it. It does it for NetMeet. Well, the old NetMeeting thing.
NetMeeting's meeting's kind of deprecated,
dead, isn't it? Yeah.
Really. So
it's not kind of deprecated. It's enormously deprecated.
All right. 8. No, sorry, but so I tell you what, we'll open that to the listeners.
We don't know anything, but yeah, I mean, check in at forums.lugradio.org or anyone who knows or wants to pimp their own product or something.
Gannon.
Drop us in a mail if it's free and let us know.
Please do.
Indeed.
Okay.
Do exactly that. I have an email from somebody called Matthew.
Ah.
But it's not our very own Matthew here.
There's lots of Matthews, isn't there?
There is a lot of Matthews. Mm.
Mark, Matthew really and John went to bed with no trousers on. So I understand.
Moving. Common names.
Exactly. He's subject
those
to
are the actual
questions for you guys.
Yes.
I have just listened to Season 3, Episode 4.
Glad he got the number right.
Indeed. Found it not only just interesting
Sparks
and
is really
funny,
good.
But also refreshing to hear a source of editorial that presents many conflicting viewpoints together. You're all very different people.
Yes.
And a show that works well because of that.
Nice.
My question, as an Ubuntu user, now that's not the reason I'm reading this out, by the way. As an Ubuntu user, that's Ubuntu for all of those Ubuntu zealots out there.
No,
I occasionally miss things from the Windows world when it comes to using my laptop in Windows. Okay. Ubuntu is installed there, thanks to the wonder that is Paul Staden. I take for granted things like codec auto-download on players. Although it could exist in the Linux world. However, my question to you is, are the things that you miss in the Linux world, well, from the Windows world, in the Linux world?
I miss having to reboot my laptop twice a day.
There isn't really anything, to be honest.
I miss decent
hibernation. I can imagine you miss quite a lot from Windows, don't you? Because you're an Active Directory monkey, aren't you?
I'll tell you something that I miss is, sometimes I do feel like, just sometimes there's maybe a bit more spit and polish occasionally. Things just seem to cling together a bit better.
A bit more eye candy, yeah?
No, things just seem to cling together a bit better. But that's not a major thing. One thing that I do miss, I think the GIMP isn't that great, and I find it a pain in the ass to work with.
So do you miss Photoshop then?
Which, if I could afford it, yes.
So you don't miss anything?
No, you just miss an application that runs on Windows.
I miss really good hibernation, I really do.
It's not as if you're using a really, really good graphics application on Windows and you're missing that on Linux, because you're not using a really, really good graphics application on Windows anyway.
No, but... No, I suppose.
Well, you could use paint.net, by the way, on Windows. No, paint.net is an open source.
Apparently.
I've seen it.
Apparently, it's quite good.
But I know nothing
about it other than it's not.
By the way, I was just saying I missed hibernation. I just wanted to point out, Ack, that you're completely wrong in your recent blog post.
I'm totally right.
In Ack's recent blog post, he actually said that there should be no such thing as hibernation. You should just shut down and start up. Is that not right?
Yes, that's exactly what I said. I was right.
No, you were wrong. What you meant to say is that you shouldn't need to reboot and you should always go into hibernate state, and that should be instant.
Your argument was that booting should take 2 seconds.
Yeah.
The thing is, it doesn't. That's why we've got hibernation.
That's right. It doesn't, so we might as well fucking give up.
But why do you need
now
to reboot? Other than kernel upgrades.
I'd like to fly to the fucking moon, but I can't do it.
What's the point in hibernating when you can actually reboot?
What's the
point? Why not actually shut the thing down?
Because
rather than having to build this stupid pointless hack that serialises all your memory to disk.
Because they want all programs to be open with all the documents in exactly the same place.
Because in Ack's wonderful world where anything is possible, even though in this world it isn't actually possible, it's a lot quicker to hibernate than to reboot.
How long does Open Solaris take to boot?
Allegedly.
8 seconds.
Seven seconds.
That's a recent project that they're working on.
Yeah, but they've managed to get it down to 7 seconds. If we'd have had the discussion two weeks ago, I'd have said, maybe we can get booted down to 7 seconds. You'd have had all the same argument saying it wasn't possible, so eat my fucking cock.
No.
Why don't you run Open Solaris on your desktop?
Yeah, use Open Solaris then.
Because I've already got KDE queued up to use, and then Symfony off, so after that I'll try Open Solaris.
The thing is, though,
I'm hearing excuses.
Do you accept that it's, from a development perspective, you can go from one state to another quicker with hibernate than rebooting?
No, not if you can boot Open Solaris in 7 seconds. No,
on Windows it's quicker. On Windows it is quicker to hibernate your computer a lot quicker than on Linux.
Much
it's pretty
quicker,
much instant.
Yeah. Yes,
right? No, okay.
That's shorter than 7 seconds.
Okay,
that's
No, I'll give you that. So we can make hibernation faster. Yeah, okay.
I'm not convinced that. We've heard this number thrown around about Solaris, but I reckon if you. I don't think that includes half the shit that you get on a typical Linux desktop.
I don't know. I mean,
the thing that
prompted that thought was people saying, yeah, we could get it to boot in 7 seconds. And I thought, well, if you can get it to boot that quickly, what's the fucking point in hibernation and suspend around and having to teach people the difference between the things?
Yeah.
I figured that.
So you should never reboot,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we should do. Yeah, you know, you're not fucking clever enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Computer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, question for Patrick Finch or Adam Leventhal or Glenn Foster. Does Solaris go from zero to gnome in 7 seconds?
We should get them on for a 5-minute update.
Yes, we should.
Right, let's do it.
Got an email. Okay, so let's move on.
We've got an email from Adam Leventhal.
Let's move on. Is it Martin?
Who's
got
the Adam Leventhal email?
Who's got it?
Because Adam wrote in, did he not?
He did actually write in.
Well, let's read out in order.
Throw in your autocomplete.
Oh, I've got it.
Yeah, there you go.
He says, when talking about TurboCash, Philip Coatman... Philip Coatman asserted that to really achieve the proper user experience on a given platform, it was necessary to build a truly
This is an interesting point.
Some counterexamples were mentioned, such as Mozilla and Firefox. It would be interesting to interview some other GUI designers for open source projects to get their feeling on the matter, and to talk to some of the folks working on the various cross-platform GUI interface to find out the state of those projects and where they stand on this issue.
Can you summarise that? Because Aid was talking over you when you made the interesting point.
Thank you, Matthew.
I think he basically wants to get people who work in cross-platform toolkits on the show.
It'd be nice to get,
for example, someone from WX Windows or QT or...
To see if Philip Coatman from TurboCash is correct, or if it is possible to do cost.
There's a massive difference between WX Windows and QT. WX Windows is supposed to be a layer which creates native widgets. QT, you just run QT on everything. So you port QT rather than your Windows using the native
WX
Windows widget.
WX Windows will it switch the OK and cancel buttons depending on what platform you're running on?
As far as I'm aware, it should do. My problem with WX Windows is it looks like arse.
Quick poll then. Is it better to design the interface for the operating system, or is it better to design one generic one?
In an ideal world, I suppose it's better to design for the operating system.
Because people are in agreement. Excellent.
All four of us.
Right, who was next? Was it
me, I think, isn't it?
Well, no, because we went out of order just...
System's buggered again.
A very, very quick email from Justin here, who says, you were talking about GNOME running a bit slower than Windows XP.
That's good.
He says, what about Eiffel? That's quite good.
What about
a tower, isn't it?
He says, on Os News, someone suggested that Eiffel would be a good language to write in.
Eiffel? Fuck off!
Just wanted to see what your take is on this language and why the community seems to be moving away
from
Why the community seems to be moving away from lower level languages?
Don't know anything about it.
Okay, my take on it is Eiffel. Fuck off. No,
don't know anything about it.
I can't have an opinion.
Right. But why are we moving away from lower level languages?
Because it's a shitload easier to code.
We've been through this
loads
on many
and loads and loads and loads of times.
I seem to remember you were wrong, weren't you?
Anyway,
Ken Fallon. Ken Fallon.
Hello, Ken. He's our man from Ireland who lives in the Netherlands.
I was going to say, yeah. I thought you lived in the Netherlands. Is he Irish?
Yeah, he's Irish.
Did he used to be married to Deirdre?
Yes, that's right.
No, that was...
Ken and Deirdre Fallon. That's right. Ken has written in to say, I left you a void mail.
It's mail of him having a shit.
Don't talk about shit. I left you a voicemail to tell people that twatetch.org are looking for presenters to give a short, circa 5 minutes, programme on any tech-related issue that you like.
What was it called?
It's Twat Radio is doing that.
I'll spell it for you.
This week with a techie.
It's TWAT in capital letters, ECH.org. It's a bit like an Etch-a-Sketch.
But more clam-like.
Go to twatetch.org. The Fab Four or some of the listeners may be interested in doing a show.
Surely it's Twatech. Anyway. Yeah.
And he sent an...
Put it together, Stuart.
Get your mic up to your mouth to record this.
He sent an...
Take a photo,
God. Right. He sent an email to Linux Magazine. Just to tell them about Lug Radio Live 2006 as well. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Ken.
So, yep, head over to twatetch.org.
It's not that funny.
You know the knobs that you control the pen with? What would they be?
Let's not go down this route.
Ovaries.
Ovaries.
Nipples.
Down there. Blimey, she must be old. Anyway. Keep sending the emails in.
You don't have to wear the glove, do you?
Keep
keep sending the emails into show at logradio.org.
There are lots more emails to go.
I just assumed you were.
Okay.
I've got this brilliant view of the people sitting there going, fucking hell, our show's called Twat Etch. That's not good. We never noticed that before.
I'm sure they did notice,
I've got an email. So from Michael Brunetto.
Yay.
Which
just
says,
one Brunetto.
Sounds like a pizza.
Give it to me. My father, so clearly
give
two
her to me.
My father finally fed up.
Just the one Brunetto. Give it to me.
My father, finally fed up with the utter dog shit that is Windows, asked me recently about this Linux thing and if he should install the Suzy disk given to him by a friend. Normally, I don't trust my folks with anything computer related, as it means I'll probably be fixing their computer not long after.
I remember this
thing. Sing that fucking song, brother. but I figure, what the hell, I'm told him to have at it. Around 10 p.m. that night, when he's usually sleeping, I got a phone call from him, all excited, because Linux is pretty awesome, and my modem didn't work, but I figured out how to fix it, and now I'm online.
Good work, Novell. Pretty cool. Corporate sponsors.
Pretty cool if you ask me. It goes to show you that so much of the everyday user's resistance to Linux is in their heads.
Yeah.
And a little sense of adventure will help you along nicely. Even my mum is using it now, no problem. Oh. This past weekend, I was told by my father, you know, I could never go back to Windows. Linux is just so much better.
Round of applause.
I was so proud.
Hooray for his father.
Well done, Mr. Brunetto Sr.
Give it
fantastic.
To me.
Nice one.
tomatoes on top of bread, isn't it?
Now,
bruschetta.
Now, Ben Steves says, I do feel that sentence is missing a subject. Ben Steves what? He says, hi, boys, love the show, blah, blah, blah. He says, just finished listening to your last Hypershite about Myth TV. He says, being from Canada, basically, the problem is in Canada that the PVRs that are coming from cable companies are really, really limited. You can't do much with them. So you can't do like a series record where you say, give me every episode of The Simpsons, that sort of thing. So he thinks that Myth TV is brilliant because it's not encumbered by proprietary formats, DRM, and it's a lot more functional than what you can get in Canada from mainstream suppliers.
Fair play.
But what he does say is, to potential Myth TV users out there, here's a little bit of advice. Don't worry about setting up a remote and all that crap. Just get a cheap wireless keyboard.
Yeah.
It's not
PVR, then. It's a computer with a wireless keyboard.
Which is
all right if you're a gimp. If you're a geek, that's fine. But if your girlfriend wants to use it...
Exactly. I mean, basically, it fails the girlfriend test.
Look,
you go out and you say to your girlfriend...
Which is important.
There it is. And she goes, how do I do this? And you go, hit Control Alt D, and then you type in record show, and then she fucking boots the telly in. So...
Yep, it's true.
I had an email from Bradley Alexander, who says, hello chaps, first I'm a new listener, I must say that your show is brilliant, you are insightful as well as funny, blah 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 blah. Oh, he said, I have had a number of occasions in the market to suffer the Lug Radio Syndrome. One time in the market, bloke sells pegs for a living.
He seems to be in the market a lot, doesn't he?
Does he sell pegs or carpet or something for a living? One time at the market, I thought they were going to escort me out. I also love your theme music. Thanks very much.
Fantastic.
He basically says, what did you think of Linus's bombshell about KD in Gnome?
We haven't got time.
Overly discussed. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Read/.org.
Yep.
Jamie, I can't pronounce his surname, writes in.
Try it.
Nah.
Smith?
That's it. Jamie Smith from now on. Dear guys, love the show. You guys are a fucking riot.
Thank you.
Nice. Thanks. Been listening since October. And sampling random old episodes. You've replaced NPR as my primary listening material for a 30-mile commute. What's NPR, by the way?
National Public Radio in America. It's their equivalent of Radio 4 in
Then he says, I hope you sleep well.
Thank you.
Fair enough.
The bloke watching us
love
asleep.
Love shit or treat on Halloween, but as for hype or shite, those are orthogonal terms, which I think Ack actually pointed out.
We know.
Yeah. So it wasn't quite as compelling as shit or treat. Here's an idea for a replacement. Take two random adjectives from the dictionary, followed by Fresh Meat's random project link, and see how the adjectives apply. Hilarity ensues. One thing that's been nagging me... Yeah, never mind. One thing that's been nagging me,
like a good idea.
Even though I laugh when it's used, I haven't quite figured out the expression, where the expression my chin comes from.
Ah, I believe it up on Wikipedia.
I believe we actually invented, well, Jono actually, and Ack invented it.
We did not.
Bollocks, did they?
We didn't invent it.
I've never heard it before you guys.
Chin.lugradio.org.
Yeah, but it's all Lug Radio, isn't it?
No.
No, not at all.
I've never heard it used before, to be fair.
It's a British schoolboy thing.
It's a British schoolboy thing.
Really?
Originally, this is my theory. I'm not sure how true this is. But originally, when you said something that was a lie, people would say, not by the hairs on my chinny chin chin.
Yes. It's
imitating the wolf
right.
from the Three Little Pigs.
And then it continues.
And then it became my chinny chin chin.
Yeah.
And then perhaps Chinny Boris.
To make things
and then
worse.
Jimmy Hill entered the equation.
That's a leap to Chinny Boris.
And in the northeast of England, Billy Wiggum.
Yeah. Okay, you know? So it's quite random.
To make things worse, Jimmy Hill, a popular British footballer, had a ridiculous chin.
If you go to chin.lugradio.org, you will see.
No. Chin.popey.org, you will see his chin. If you go to chin.lugradio.org, yeah, if you go to chin.lugradio.org, you'll see the chinny raccoon.
Okay.
It comes from chinny reckon, which was something else you said when being unbelievable people were saying.
I reckon chinny reckon.
Jamie wishes he'd never asked this question.
My mate Adam was in a band called Chinny Reckon.
Really?
At school in Hell.
Beard. Once again, another thing you might say if you didn't quite believe what someone was saying.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm sure as well. Well done.
Any more emails?
No more emails.
Fantastic. He's got about three.
No, I've got one here. Which is from Yonkeltron, saying we were having a discussion on Hashlug Radio about how the magic audio folders appear when you throw an audio CD into Kubuntu. Throw an audio CD into a machine, and when it opens the CD automatically, there will be folders that appear to be on the disc with the files in OGG, FLAC, MP3, and other formats. When you copy a folder to your machine, the files get ripped and encoded on the fly. How does this work? Where does the work happen?
I don't know.
I assume it happens in whatever the KDE equivalent of GNOME VFS is.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it's called.
I didn't know that feature.
That's where it'll happen. It's quite a nice little...
It is cool.
I imagine it's built in partially into the KDE GNOME VFS and partially into Conqueror.
I think it's an iOS.
It'll be an iOS.
Conqueror.
Cool.
Yep.
Well, keep sending them in.
Keep sending them in.
Just don't forget the voicemails.
Yeah, as we, as we outro to the show, because we're nearly an hour and a half.
No, we're not.
We are.
Oh, no.
We're nearly
an hour and a half.
So let's outro to this fine show. Is there anything else that you need to get off your chest before
Happy Christmas!
Merry Christmas! Yep.
This is the last one of 2005. Thanks for listening to us.
Thanks for sticking with us throughout the year. Those of you who stuck with us, those of you who joined us during the year, thanks for joining us. Those of you who fucked off during the year, listen to this, so you're all twat.
Or is that twat check?
Fucking twat.
Twat.
Go to the forums. Lugradio.org/map.
Let's not forget the clan, John.
The clan.lugradio.org.
#lugradio3node.net.
Thanks to Neuro, Tony.
Neuro!
Tony.
Whitmore.
Not Tony Mobley, IMAP. Tony Whitmore, and who was the other person?
No, just Neuro and Tony Whitmore.
Was it just those two? They are now wiki admins.
Yep.
So thank you very much for looking after
the wiki.
Wiki.lugradio.org. And the other thing.
We've got a voicemail from Neuro, haven't we?
We have. But
we've not got time for it.
we're not again.
Nero, do it again.
but shorter this time and in English.
Controversial. I've forgotten. Lug Radio Live, obviously, next year.
Yep.
22nd, 23rd of July.
Yep.
We're releasing some of the live clips from last year's other week.
Beard.
It's out. Check it out.
My chin.
Check it out.
Mychin.org.
Check it out.
Where does that come from?
No, it's okay.
So forums.lugradio.org, look in the Lug Radio Live forum.
It's on the Lug Radio Live website as well.
Yep.
So let's outro.
Should we play out on the voicemail?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just explain the basis behind this. We thought it would be nice to have people ring up the voicemail number and wish us happy Christmas.
Leave us some Christmassy messages.
Yes. That voicemail number again?
That didn't happen. 0870-931-1730.
So bearing in mind, these people from the Lug Radio channel, I also asked some people in the GNOME channel and the Myth TV users channel.
And the forum.
This intelligent group of people, intelligent, hard-working geeks who know a lot about technology, this is what they produced.
Hey, this is Alia from Hashlug Radio, wishing you all a very Merry Christmas and hoping the fat bearded one gives you all what you want.
Ubuntu!
Ubuntu!
Hi, Log Radio. I think you're doing a fantastic job. Apart from Jono has a tiny penis. Ubuntu.
Ubuntu!
Hi, this is Christian Schalder from the Dreamstreamer and GNOME Project. A Merry Christmas to the Log Radio community and a special thanks to the Log Radio crew for making Manly Love a household term.
Ubuntu?
Yes, sir. One of your drones from Sector 7G.
Ah, Ubuntu, eh? Excellent. Ubuntu, 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 Ubuntu!
Ah. Happy Christmas, Log Radio! I think that General Bacon is rad sexy.
This is the Angry Angel just calling to say have a happy Christmas, Log Radio. And the official response, say, we have more Log... Oh, fuck. That's completely balls down.
Merry Christmas, Log Radio. And may Santa bring you Shuttleworthian and riches and, I don't know, some decent jokes or something.
Hey, Log Radio dudes, it's Neo here. Merry Christmas to one and all, and a happy new year, and many, many munches. Hey, catch you later, dudes.
Ubuntu.
Okay. Let's get by, guys.
Ubuntu.
Ubuntu. Slackware.